Hello, I'm Preston Schleinkofer, host of Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disasters might affect you and your community. Winter cold and flu season is still upon us, and we should be fortifying our immune system to counter these threats, especially with the neurovirus that's out there as well. So I recommend doTERRA's On Guard products, specifically the beadlets and soft gels. The On Guard ingredients of pure essential oils make this one powerful aid in helping our family maintain good health. To find out more, visit our website at oilsforlifetoday.com. That's oils4lifetoday.com, or find the link at the bottom of the show notes, and it'll take you right there to the page. So let's get on with our show. This week is part two of our interview with Lieutenant General Stephen Quast, U.S. Air Force retired. General Quast retired from the Air Force, and he is a former commander of the Air Education and Training Command at Joint Base San Antonio Randolph, a graduate of the United States Air Force Academy with a degree in astronautical engineering. He holds a master's degree in public policy from the Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He is a past president of the Air Force's Air University in Montgomery, Alabama, and a former fighter pilot with extensive combat and command experience. He is the author of the study Fast Space, Leveraging Ultra-Low-Cost Space Access for the 21st Century Challenges. And it is our pleasure to have him back this week in part two of our interview. And welcome back, General. General, the first half hour of the show was so informative. I don't even know where to begin. But one question looms in my mind, and probably other people's minds. Why manufacturing on the moon? Why is there an advantage over a weightless environment for manufacturing? And then is there a threat of bringing it back on into an environment that is, you know, exposed to gravity? Where's the benefit there? And maybe we can also get into the background on 5G a little bit, and you know, whatever else you want to talk about.
Yeah, no, that's good. I will get there, because really all I've touched on in this first section is transportation and energy. I'll move deeper into telecommunication and manufacturing and why space is important here. But the other piece I'd like to frame on this second one is that this is inspirational, meaning that there is a vision here that is so positive for the human spirit and the human condition, that speaks to the angels within us, that even though there is potential fear and danger if we don't act, but if we do act, we can build a future that really pulls us out of some of the dilemmas we're forced to live with today. I want to talk about that vision and the prosperity and the peace that we as a civilization can give back to this world because of the gift of our Constitution and how powerful it is to the human spirit. You know, last week we talked about some of the historical trend lines of what's going on here, meaning that history is always a journey of struggle for power and a struggle for values. So America has its values enshrined in our Constitution, which is the value of that every human being is created equal and is equally loved by their mother and their father, no matter what country they live in, no matter what they believe in, that they are respected as being of equal value. As long as that person also values you, that's the important thing, is that there has to be a reciprocal relationship of humanity. That value, and then the value of hard work, where when you work hard, you get to benefit from the fruits of that work, and that is a freedom, a liberty to pursue happiness. And then the struggle with these other civilizations, the Chinese civilization, whose value is that party rule is the only way to survive as a civilization. Therefore, everybody in the civilization must subordinate their freedom to some degree or another to the central party. Or ISIS rule, where you are going to kill anybody that does not believe religiously the way you believe. This is what we're struggling for. And North Korea and Iran are struggling, so they have power, and so their values rule. So let's not make any mistakes that this is a struggle for our survival as a civilization. But it can be a good news story, and here is why. We have an opportunity with the technologies that have been invented even in the last 5 years to build a future American reality that makes us prosperous and peaceful by building energy markets to deliver energy at affordable price points to anybody on planet Earth, even if they don't have infrastructure close to them. They don't have to live in a city, and they can receive energy through radio waves in a way that we have never even imagined as a human race. We can, and it can provide for us pollution-free energy, because we're using the sun and solar power from space to create the radio waves that are safe for human beings to energize the global marketplace. And America will prosper, because if we build that infrastructure, we benefit from the profits of that infrastructure and that economy, that marketplace. We have the potential for, I know we say this as a joke, but we have the potential of solving world hunger, because we know how to deliver water to anybody on planet Earth, even if they don't live near a stream or an aquifer or have pipes bringing them water. We know how to grow food in any environment on planet Earth if you can bring water and energy to that spot. We have the potential of developing transportation capability that can take anybody from anywhere on planet Earth to anywhere else on planet Earth in less than an hour. And those price points have already plummeted multiple times. Look at Elon Musk alone. He has already developed a reusable first stage and now reusable second stages. And his Starliner is planning on tapping into that market where you can get anywhere in the world in less than an hour. And think about what that means for our power projection, for our companies. Time is money in the 21st century. And if you can get to Europe in an hour to do business and then be back home for dinner, there's a market for that. Now, the other one is information. I'd like to spend a little time on this. We as a society can have a vision where we finally give to planet Earth trusted data to every individual. Right now, this is one of the massive vulnerabilities and scourges of our life. Even in the U.S. alone, it's over $450 billion of theft in the cyber domain.
That's massive.
In our economy each year. I mean, talk about a friction cost of effectiveness and efficiency in the marketplace. But the reason it exists is because we designed an internet to be free and open and have no ability for security. And now we're trying to make something that was designed to be open and free, we're trying to make it secure. And if we don't change the architecture, we will run out of money trying to make something whose character was to be free and open to be secure and private. America could, using space, develop gateways of telecommunications that is 6G or 7G, let's say. We know how to do it. That could give every human being that wants to sign up with America data they can trust, that is private, and it protects their civil liberties and their independence. Yet we're not building that, and we could. So on every level, America could say to the rest of the world, okay, we are at an intersection where these great powers like China and Russia and North Korea and Iran are trying to use their totalitarian governments and their dictatorships to build an economy in the future, which is the foundation of all national security, and get prosperous doing so, so that their values will rule. If we want to be in this competition, we need to build these four engines, and space is the geographic high ground to do this affordably, where you can build a new model for transportation globally, like we did when we discovered ships and deep sea navigation. You can build new telecommunication models in the form of 6G and quantum that use gateways in space that can communicate to anybody on planet Earth instantaneously with trusted gateways in techniques and technologies that do not make it vulnerable to hackers. You can build resilient and capable energy that can be delivered through radio waves to anybody on planet Earth, and you can deliver manufacturing to anybody on Earth. Now, let me talk about manufacturing very quickly, because many people may not understand the power of manufacturing in space. I'll take two components of manufacturing space, but one is space has a natural refrigerator, meaning that it is as cold as ice, okay? And just take a look at the server farms we have right now, for example. Data is in such demand and such a growth industry that we have data farms that are sucking down more energy than many of our cities put together because of the need to keep that electronics cool. And now the cost and the pollution that comes from trying to keep those things cool is a major issue that hasn't really properly been measured, but it's a massive problem growing. Imagine taking all of that and moving it into space where you have free air conditioning that you can manage. And now it almost becomes free because now you have solar energy that can heat it up to, let's say, negative 50 degrees, which is a good temperature for some of the electronics. And it doesn't take much energy, and you have the free sun using solar power to energize the molecules to be at the right temperature using the power of the sun and the power of the ice of space to manage an environment that takes it off planet Earth and one, takes it out of the vulnerability where somebody could attack it, and you move it outside of orbit. In cislunar space, where you can watch it, protect it, and only people that can get into space could attack it. But if you're there first, you can protect it, just like we protect our cities and our bases today. The other piece of manufacturing that people need to understand is the power of zero G. Right now, with one gravity, we have to fight that to develop certain structures. And when you understand the molecular level of construction and 3D printing, being in zero G allows you to create masterful structures that have intricate detail inside that is not crushed and encumbered in its creation by gravity. And you can take these structures and build them to almost any size because the vacuum of space and no G does not have all the structural realities of the current model of building within the terrestrial and the 1G gravity well. You could 3D print a building that has all of the infrastructure built internally, and then you could deliver it onto Earth as light as a feather. And this is the other paradigm people have the impression of, that the only way to get from space onto Earth is to go through a very violent and hot reentry where you're burning up before you land. And it's just not true. You take a look at the people that have jumped out of these hot air balloons that go up into space and then jump out. They're falling. They fall down to the Earth just fine in a spacesuit, and then they pull the ripcord and land on the Earth as light as a feather. Mm-hmm. It's all about velocity. And if you approach the Earth from the moon and you can use the solar power from the sun to energize your engines to slow down, so you are moving at the same speed as the molecules of our environment or of our atmosphere, you can then descend in that atmosphere as light as a feather and land anywhere on planet Earth for literally pennies on the dollar for the kind of transportation costs required if you're moving through the friction of the sea, land, or the air. A totally different model of transportation that can take advantage of manufacturing in space. Now, this doesn't even start tapping into the research for medicine and for things that uplift the human condition. So when I talk about this threat that China is moving, China sees all the physics and the science and the advantages of space, and they are building the Panama Canal, the Suez Canal, the ships of space to deliver commerce and blessing to trillion-dollar marketplaces on Earth. The threat is if they build all that, we are the second-rate power on planet Earth, which comes with consequences when you have a culture that victimizes those they don't believe in, and China that has said that we are an existential threat to their survival as a belief system, as a cultural paradigm. But we don't have to worry about any of that if America has the vision to say we are going to build a world where America will be prosperous because we benefit from the trillion-dollar marketplace profits of these new marketplaces, and we are going to build peace through strength because we own transportation markets, energy markets, information markets, and manufacturing markets that can change the fate for the human race. That's a vision worth getting after.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it just means that somebody's got to pull all these different factors together in order to focus the industry and government. Government always likes to regulate things, so yeah. They usually 2 or 3 years behind anything new, like crypto. I mean, it took them, well, they're still trying to figure that out, but there's always something that gets in the way of the people with the ideas and the ones that are moving forward on things like this. So what can we do, or what can we as a nation and business do to jump ahead of where the Chinese are at right now and help us to become dominant in this? Because, you know, there's no question that America is the freest country on earth and one of the most helpful and friendly and giving nations that's ever existed. So I don't see a threat of us being dominant, but I see a threat of us not getting organized and moving in that direction.
Yes, and so I'll give you one quick example that illustrates how deeply we can get entrenched in the paradigms of the past and these ruts of how we've done things before. And most Americans are not aware of this, but once a company has done something that is good, Congress will write regulations and laws around that to protect it and to keep it safe and effective for its purpose. And that's all well and good until the game changes and that is no longer as useful. Businesses are still required to obey it. And I'll give you this example. So when we figured out how to go to space in the 60s, we regulated and wrote laws around that. So right now, I'll give you the analogy of if you were trying to go to space right now as a private citizen, it would be as if you're trying to buy, I'll use the ticket from New York to LA. It would be as if in order to buy that ticket from New York to LA, you first have to provide a list of everything you're going to take on the plane, your toothbrush, your toothpaste, everything. And then there's going to be a whole host of researchers that are going to see whether that's space rated or not. Meaning, is that good enough to go on the plane? And if it's not, you're rejected and you have to start the process all over. And they have a year to do that. So you got to apply about a year in advance to have them scour your stuff. And then any time in that year, they can reject you. You got to go to the back of the line and start over, where you have to invent a new kind of toothbrush that is space rated. If you do get through that bureaucratic hoop, then you have to give them your life savings to go from New York to LA because it is enormously expensive. And it's expensive because you are by law required that when you get to LA in that aircraft, you have to burn the aircraft to the ground, meaning the aircraft is built for one use and one use only. And when you land, it burns up. Now, it burns up in the atmosphere because but that is a statutory and regulatory requirement of mission assurance and risk aversion that is so that was built up in an age where going to space was dangerous, expensive, and episodic, meaning it didn't happen very often. But we now live in an age where poor Elon Musk, for example, here he's trying to innovate, and 5 years ago, the bureaucracy hated him for even suggesting that, a reusable first stage, meaning aviation-like access to space, was possible. They're like, it's impossible. It's too expensive. You're going to waste the government money. We don't want to give you any contracts. And it was only because of some courageous people in the bureaucracy at NASA and Ames that did the NASA-Ames-COTS relationship of public-private partnership that built the Falcon 9 that now has become the Starship that will truly maybe break open this transportation to space at affordable price points for every human being. we do get stuck. So what America needs to do is talk to their congressional members and say, Congress, you need to have some faith in our entrepreneurs and our private companies. Give them the latitude to have some exceptions to policy and go try and tinker and explore and experiment with these new technologies and these new techniques, and let them have some freedom. Because if you don't take risk to try new things in new ways, your competition will always beat you. And believe me, China is giving permission to their people. They have more geniuses studying space than we have children in America. I mean, that's the magnitude of difference between 330 million people and 1.4 billion people almost in China. And that matters, because Chinese are as smart and they are as creative as and as clever as we are, but they are also tend to be more strategic and have the 100-year view and understand that economic dominance ultimately is military and political dominance. And that's their game. And it's like a slow-growing vine around the spinal cord of America. We don't even see it. We don't even feel it. It's insidious. Yet they are dominating our they are in our cyber markets. They are in our land markets. They are in our businesses. And they're doing the same thing they did to the telecommunication market, where they are stealing our intellectual property and our proprietary rights. They're making small space companies go bankrupt because they are stealing their stuff, duplicating it, and then flooding the markets illegally with Chinese stuff. And America better wake up. So American people, tell your congressional members, protect these companies from China and let them be free to experiment and explore. And if we do that, American creativity, our open market, our free society will out-innovate China, but we have to move fast.
Well, I think another thing we have to do is we have to designate certain companies in this realm as national security interests and prevent any foreign participation, oversight, or any foreign students, which is a big problem in a lot of areas, working on things that would benefit us, and you know they could take back with them to China. So there's like right now we've got this big threat in our power grid, but we've also got Chinese and other foreign companies that are members of these various organizations within the power industry that may or may not be influencing the choices of the power industry to remain susceptible to cyber and physical and EMP attack. So I wonder if our space industry can be built in that type of environment where it's safe and secure and it's quickly identified as a national priority, a national security resource that This is going to be very well regulated, restricted access, things like that, in order to do this.
Yeah, so it's a delicate balance. And this is where the government should do what only the government can do and not try to do what only private companies can do. And I'll give you two examples very quickly, but then I want to make a point about the young generation in America and how important they are and how we have to tap into their genius. But back to this idea that we have these students riddled into our process. So we know that innovation truly is accelerated like gas on a fire when you have more diverse views considering the problem and considering the options and the ideas for solving that problem. So you want people from different cultural mindsets and different walks of life and different backgrounds and different experiences coming to the table to think about it. Just like you and I. You and I have unique perspectives because we had unique experiences. And if you didn't have the experiences you've had in the different silos that you've lived, you would not be able to crosswalk those silos in a holistic, systemic way, and you would not be as creative. Just as had I not grown up in a tribal society with no electricity, no security, and no education, I would not have had the voracious appetite to learn and discover and see things through the lens of culture and human nature and strategy, technology, economics, and politics. So we can't shut people out as a method for innovating more rapidly. We need the global community to be a part of this. And this is where America has a competitive advantage. We have more, there are more people on this planet that believe in the freedom and the dignity of every human being than there are despots and tyrants who believe in subjugating a person's will to their will, and they'll kill them if they don't do it, like we see with the Uyghurs and with Tibetans and with in Hong Kong. And ISIS, for example, and Iran and North Korea. So if we believe that more people on planet Earth do respect the dignity and sanctity of the human spirit, we have a competitive advantage, but you need trusted relationships. And so this goes to what I'm talking about. What the government can do is provide capabilities that allow us to communicate in a trusted way, where we can evolve an idea, and speed becomes our competitive advantage. Speed becomes the security. The industrial age model is Fort Knox is our security. So we shut it all down. We shove people out of the door, and then we try to innovate within this little cocoon of Fort Knox. It would be like people in this century building a city and then building a moat and a wall around it, thinking that somehow that's going to protect them, when we have air power and we have space and we have cyber. You know, the threat is within, and you're wasting your money on a stone wall and a moat with alligators in the 21st century. So let's be careful to make sure that when we talk to Congress, they don't do what the government tends to overreact. You know, Congress either overreacts or underreacts. And if left to their own accord, they will overregulate in a way that crushes and snuffs out the seed of innovation. There is a way of doing it responsibly, but only if the government is not in the business of picking winners and losers. Let the free market decide that, and allow innovation to err to the side of openness and collaboration. But when you find a magic sauce, then you build it in private. And then if it's useful, it's something you can run with. So I agree with your statement. As long as Congress doesn't overreact and push foreigners out of our laboratories, because those foreigners are sometimes the ones that have a perspective that an American would never think of. And it can be the game changer that saves our lives.
That's a good point.
So now the second piece, it takes a lot of wisdom to manage this. But when you start with a vision as big enough for the American spirit and for the gift of this Constitution that's so unique in the history of mankind, it will play out well. I am convinced of that. And here's why. And it's something the chief of my tribe taught me when I was a little kid. It was ironic because, you know, at the time, I didn't know what I was listening to. And I really didn't understand the power of what he was saying. But even though they didn't have the advantage of Western civilization or Western history, they didn't have the advantage of any technologies, the one thing they did know is they knew human nature, and they knew the tribe, and they knew each other. And this chief had a problem. And the problem was that there was no security. Another tribe would come through, and if that tribe was more powerful, they would cheat and steal and rob and pilfer and rape and kidnap. And so as kids, anytime a foreign tribe would come through, we'd kind of have to go to ground to survive. Now, what the chief taught me, though, and how he survived and why he was so good, is that he did not rely on the old elders of the tribe to give him the ideas of how to adapt and survive. He looked to the young.
Oh, yeah.
He understood that the young had fresh eyes and were not trapped in the paradigms of the past and the fact that we get into intellectual ruts because of the journey we've been on. That's why the bureaucracy always does what it always did, and they defend the status quo to the death, because they are conditioned that we did it this way before and it worked, therefore we're going to do it that way. And the older you get, you tend to get more risk averse, where you don't want to fail, therefore you don't want to try something new just in case it fails. Yeah, that's the kiss of death when you're against a competitor that's fighting for its survival to beat you. So here is his lesson. His lesson is to his elders, Tell the young our problem. Let them give you their solutions with their fresh minds and their fresh perspectives and the diversity of thought that comes from a young mind. Now, beware. They will give you 100 ideas to solve this problem, and 98 of them will get you killed. Okay. But two of them will be game changers. And your job as the elders, the wise elders, is to take what you've learned in your life. That's the wisdom, the understanding of human nature and of culture, the good and the bad that come with human nature, and test their ideas. He didn't say the scientific method, but that's what he used. He tested their ideas. Now, these were fairly simple ideas because the technology was not very evolved, but they were very clever ideas. And you're right, some of them didn't work. But the ones that did, they adopted, that leadership adopted the ones that were game changers wholeheartedly. And the tribe survived again and again and again because they were more clever and more strategic. And their vast seed corn of ideas came from the young. So our youngsters, you know, the old generation loves to throw the young generation under the bus. Oh, they're under the bus, you know, and it's a dynamic as old as time, you know, the generation gap. But we say, oh, they're lazy, or they're stuck to their phones, or they are, you know, this or that. And it's all just not true. If we want to optimize human nature, the leaders of companies, the leaders and the ones that are adaptive and creative do this. The wise leaders, and government needs to do this. The wise leaders give their problems to the young generation and open source collaborate on ideas. And then they don't throw an idea out just because it does it in a different way. Or it, like with England in World War I, they did not want to throw away their idea of the cavalry and the rifle and the line of soldiers shoulder to shoulder, because that was their honor. That was their heraldry. You know, so we have people in America who have lived a military tradition, and they want to keep doing it the same way because their father did it that way and their mother did it that way. And that's, they attach their sense of heroism to the technique and technology. And that is not the case with the young. So the government needs to get those ideas, test them, and then be willing to be humble enough to adopt different ideas if they've been tested and they work in the crucible of the scientific method.
Wow. That's a great philosophy there that your chief taught you. That was quite an experience. It is true that it takes a diversity of thought to come up with new ideas, and that's what stovepiping kind of is a problem with, because we don't get the information where we need it sometimes.
So there's a way of solving this, though. Just 30 seconds on the way you can solve this.
Okay. Sure.
You don't have to necessarily let every Chinese student in without knowing who they are or what they're going to go back to or what they're going to steal. The beauty of our country is that we are a country of immigrants. And there are people that grew up in China, that grew up in Africa, that grew up in South America, that grew up in Asia, that already live here and believe in the American Constitution and the liberty and prosperity of the free market and of people that have their liberty. And they are the ones. And there's plenty of talent there. They're engineers, they're scientists, they're doctors, they're educators. We can tap into what we already have and get enough diversity of thought to change the game. We don't have to let people in we don't trust, we don't know. We don't have to take that risk. There is a way of doing both, and this gets back to immigration. It has to be a disciplined and strategic method of immigration that allows people into America, but only if they believe in the values of human dignity and of hard work, steeped in the freedom and the liberty of every individual.
That's the way it used to be, but politics has changed that. I spent 27 years as an immigration officer in Border Patrol and ICE, and I saw a lot of changes along the years. And even now, I see changes that are happening. Some under this administration are trying to fix the problems of the past, there's still people out there who want to make their own immigration plan. And that doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. So you're exactly right. It has been something good has been bastardized into something dysfunctional that becomes a threat. And we need to get back to these basic universal principles of governance that have made our country what it is and can make us prosperous and peaceful in the future. But you need leaders with a vision, and you need an education system that teaches our young these universal principles. And that's we've lost that too. So we got a lot of work to do, but America is on the edge of greatness here if we so choose. We can move forward into this new marketplace of space responsibly because we've learned from the past, and we don't have to denigrate civilizations. We don't have to denigrate humanity. We can uplift the human condition and respect every other civilization that respects us. And there's more of us than there are despots that want to kill us. So if we tap into that reality of our world, America can be rich, prosperous, and peaceful in the years to come. But that vision has not been set right now. There is no politician that has set the broader vision of economic vibrance and prosperity that leads to peace. And we need that.
Yes, you're right. And we also need civil defense. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our website at civildefenseradio.com under the Resources tab. It's enough to get the conversation started. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio, where we post information on a fairly regular basis, but mostly on Facebook. I wish to thank General Quast for being with us these 2 days, and this has been quite a conversation, and I pray that everybody that was listening to this or will listen to it will take something very major with them when they are finished listening to these two shows. I also want to thank our friends and listeners out there who are with us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.